Good day, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Amdocs Management Limited Q4 2015 earnings call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, we will conduct a question-and-answer session, and instructions will follow at that time. If anyone should require assistance during the conference, please press star then zero on your touch-tone phone. As a reminder, this conference is being recorded. I would like to introduce your host for today's conference, Mr. Matt Smith, Head of Investor Relations. Sir, please begin.
Thank you, Vince. Before we begin, I would like to point out that during this call, we will discuss certain financial information that is not prepared in accordance with GAAP. The company's management uses this financial information in its internal analysis in order to exclude the effect of acquisitions and other significant items that may have a disproportionate effect in a particular period. Accordingly, management believes that isolating the effects of such events enables management and investors to consistently analyze the critical components and results of operations of the company's business and to have a more meaningful comparison to prior periods. For more information regarding our use of non-GAAP financial measures, including reconciliations of these measures, we refer you to today's earnings release, which will also be furnished with the SEC on Form 6-K. Also, this call includes information that constitutes forward-looking statements. Although we believe the expectations reflected in such forward-looking statements are based upon reasonable assumptions, we can give no assurance that our expectations will be obtained or that any deviations will not be material. Such statements involve risks and uncertainties that may cause future results to differ from those anticipated. These risks include, but are not limited to, the effects of general economic conditions and such other risks as discussed in our earnings release today and at greater length in the company's filings with the Securities and Exchange Commission, including in our annual report on Form 20-F for the fiscal year ended September 30, 2014, filed on December 8, 2014, our Form 6-K furnished for the first quarter of fiscal 2015 on February 9, 2015, our Form 6-K furnished for the second fiscal quarter of 2015 on May 11, 2015, and for the third fiscal quarter of 2015 on August 10, 2015. Amdocs may elect to update these forward-looking statements at some point in the future. However, the company specifically disclaims any obligation to do so. Participating on the call with me today are Eli Gellman, President and Chief Executive Officer of Amdocs Management Limited, and Tamar Rapaport-Dagim, Chief Financial Officer. With that, I'll turn it over to Eli.
Thank you, Matt, and good afternoon to anyone joining us on the call today. Fiscal 2015 was a good year for Amdocs, with continued progress across our various growth initiatives. We maintained a very strong win rate, securing several major transformation projects across the globe. We strengthened our market-leading portfolio with the release of CES 9.3 and brought additional functionality such as big data analytics, network function virtualization, and mobile financial services. We executed the acquisition of Commerce BSS assets, which significantly enlarged our customer base. Overall, we closed fiscal 2015 with record backlog and non-GAAP earnings per share growth of 7%, consistent with the high end of our projections over the beginning of the year. Our free cash flow was exceptionally strong, and we delivered on our commitment to accelerate our share repurchase activity in the fourth quarter. Furthermore, we achieved these results despite challenging market conditions in North America and worse than expected volatility of foreign currencies. Now, let me provide some color on our regional activity in fiscal 2015, with the emphasis on our fourth quarter performance. Beginning with North America, market consolidation activity affected our ability to predict and execute as planned in fiscal 2015. We used this year to strengthen long-standing customer relationships by leveraging the value proposition of our unique business model. During quarter four, we extended an existing managed services agreement with Bell Canada for additional 5 years through 2022. We also signed a new 3-year service agreement with Rogers Communications in Canada to simplify its operations and increase efficiencies across multiple lines of business. These new arrangements follow the 5-year managed services arrangement that we entered in with UScellular earlier in the year and provide a solid base of which we can bring additional products and services and operational benefits for those customers in the future. In Europe, foreign currency movements negatively impacted revenue. However, we expanded our business with market-leading service providers such as Vodafone, which in the fourth quarter selected Amdocs for a major Fori managed BSS OSS transformation project for its UK enterprise business. We believe that this award demonstrates our advanced position addressing this unique market needs and the highly complex and increasingly important enterprise customer sector. Moreover, this win follows the recent delivery of a complex OSS consolidation project for Vodafone Netherlands and is a further evidence of our growing value to this highly strategic customer. In rest of the world, we delivered strong double-digit growth and record revenue in fiscal 2015. Our strategy to serve the world's largest and most influential service providers has resulted in sustained win momentum over the last few years. In the fourth quarter, specifically, we won several additional deals. In Southeast Asia, Singtel selected Amdocs to deliver a single platform for online care and commerce for its market in Singapore and Australia, which adds to the major BSS transformation project we announced a year ago. In Latin America, a major carrier has implemented Amdocs mobile network optimization solution to improve its customer network experience, thereby highlighting our ability to drive additional customer value with our new offerings. We are also pleased that KD Corporation, previously known as Korea Telecom, has selected Amdocs under a new multi-year service agreement for a strategic charging transformation project to consolidate and modernize charging operations across its quad play line of business. Moving to fiscal 2016, let me shed some more light in the various market dynamics we expect across regions so you will have a better understanding of our environment in which we operate. Beginning with North America, we remain affected by the slower pace of certain discretionary programs at AT&T. As we discussed with you last quarter, we already see some new initiatives developing for which we believe we are best positioned to bring value and service to AT&T over the long term. Having said that, new discretionary projects can take time to come to fruition. A good example of this is AT&T Mexico, where we were recently selected to deliver a new business platform to support AT&T investments in AUSACEL and Nextel Mexico. These investments are a fundamental component of AT&T expansion in Mexico, where its strategy is to replicate the same 4G LTE experience it provides in the United States. Regarding AT&T plans for DirecTV and other strategic initiatives, we believe we have the relevant offerings and we are working diligently to prove that we are the right partner. Overall, we are encouraged by early signs of positive momentum at AT&T on various new fronts, but success is not assured and the timing of any of these new awards is difficult to predict. It is therefore hard to project the revenue implication of such new projects. More broadly in North America, the long-term market dynamics is generally favorable, but our short-term outlook still contains many moving parts and unknowns. This extends to the consolidation activity currently in progress, or which may be contemplated among wireless and pay TV operators, as the political and regulatory environment hopefully begins to crystallize around next year's presidential election. In Europe, we are well positioned, and despite regional macro and regulatory conditions, which we are closely watching, of course, we believe we can grow in this region further in fiscal 2016. In the rest of the world, we see a rich pipeline of opportunities across product set and regions, and we are strengthening our market position through investments such as the operations center we are now establishing in Guadalajara to support our growing business in Mexico and the broader region. We therefore believe double-digit growth is sustainable this year, but not necessarily at the rate we enjoyed in fiscal 2015. Furthermore, we remind you that the sequential trends are lumpy given the project orientation of the activities in this region. Another dimension of global outlook is commerce, where our first priority is to ensure business continuity and support for the customer relationships we acquired. This includes Infocom, as well as near Amdocs customers such as M1 Limited in Singapore and Oi in Brazil, the latter of which I alluded to in my remarks last quarter. Amdocs has worked closely with M1 and Oi to successfully deploy solutions based on Compass technology And while building a pipeline of opportunities will take time, we look forward to gradually strengthening and expanding our relationship with Converse customers such as these by bringing our superior range of offerings and world-class services. Overall, we believe our superior offering, operational discipline, and unique business model position Amdocs for another successful year in 2016. Our starting backlog is strong, and we expect to maintain our high win rate for major transformation projects like those awarded to us last year at Telefonica, Singtel, and Vodafone. The overall direction is therefore positive, but it may take a few more quarters before with the potential of opportunities, such as those at AT&T and Converse, begins to materialize and translate revenue and growth. With this factor in mind, we expect total revenue growth to be within the range of roughly 2% to 6% on a constant currency basis and roughly 1% to 5% on a reported basis after including an anticipated drag from foreign currency fluctuation of about 1%. This outlook translates to a slow start of the year, followed by a stronger second half, and takes into consideration many macro and industry-specific risks and unknowns. However, we cannot predict all possible outcomes. To summarize, we expect to deliver total return to shareholders in the mid to high single digit in fiscal 2016, and we plan to utilize the five levers we outlined at our Analyst and Investors Day last December to execute on this objective. First, we are making the right R&D investments necessary to drive long-term growth without compromising our consistent operating profitability. Our activities in big data analytics are translating to commercial deployments, such as those announced today with Telefonica Argentina. And we see similar potential in other promising domains, such as services 3.0, network function virtualization, and mobile financial services. While relatively small in size today, new offerings such as these contribute to our overall market position and create the layers of growth that we expect will benefit us in the future years. Second, we are proud of our professionalism of our IT capabilities, which we continue to improve through the consistent execution of our world-class delivery group and the efficiency of our managed services organization. Third, we remain committed to the disciplined and proactive allocation of cash, as demonstrated by our return of approximately 80% of free cash flow to shareholders over the past 3 years. This was achieved by executing on our share purchase activity at levels well ahead of that suggested by our 50-50 framework, as we felt we could do that while supporting our strategic initiatives. We plan to maintain a fairly similar philosophy in fiscal 2016, although we will, of course, exercise flexibility and vary the level of share repurchase activity both from quarter to quarter, depending on factors such as capital requirements and the size and timing of M&A activities. Fourth, we are pleased to announce that our board has approved the increase of quarterly cash dividend for the third consecutive year. The new quarterly dividend represents an increase of nearly 15% to 19.5 cents per share and is subject to shareholders' approval at our annual meeting in February. The decision to raise the dividend demonstrates our confidence in the future success of Amdocs. As a reminder, future changes in the dividend will be subject to periodic review. Finally, we retain significant capacity to drive long-term growth through additional M&A. We continue to see rich pipeline of M&A opportunities, but as we repeatedly demonstrated, we are disciplined in our approach, and we will only act when we find the right targets that fit our strategy at the right time and the right price. With that, let me turn the call over to Tamar.
Thank you, Eli. Fourth fiscal quarter revenue of $927 million was within our guidance range of $915 million to $955 and included a negative impact from foreign currency fluctuations of approximately $9 million relative to the third fiscal quarter of 2015. Our fourth quarter guidance range has included a minimal sequential impact from foreign currency fluctuations. The revenue performance was therefore slightly above the midpoint of our expectations after adjusting for the foreign currency fluctuations. We remind you that a foreign currency hedging program is designed to protect our profitability and free cash flow generation rather than revenue, and we are pleased that this approach has proven effective through the volatile currency markets of fiscal 2015. As expected, our fourth fiscal quarter non-GAAP operating margin was 16.9%, a decrease of 20 basis points compared to the third fiscal quarter of 2015, and towards the high end of our long-term target range of 16.2% to 17.2%. Below the operating line, non-GAAP net interest and other expense was $1.4 million in Q4. For forward-looking purposes, we continue to expect a non-GAAP net interest and other expense in the range of a few million dollars quarterly due to foreign currency fluctuations. Diluted non-GAAP EPS was 84 cents in Q4, compared to a guidance range of 79 to 85 cents. As anticipated, our non-GAAP effective tax rate was above the high end of our target range of 13 to 15% in Q4, but within our expected annual range for the full year of 2015. Diluted non-GAAP EPS excludes $13 million of non-recurring restructuring charges associated with the acquisition of the Converse BSS assets. Free cash flow was strong at $180 million in Q4. This was comprised of cash flow from operations of approximately $207 million, less $27 in net capital expenditures and other. Let me take a moment to elaborate on our free cash flow, which reflects exceptional conversion rates well ahead of non-GAAP net income over the last three fiscal years, including 2015. We remind you that this performance is not sustainable over the long term, and we expect that free cash flow will convert at a rate more on par with our expected non-GAAP net income in fiscal 2016. DSO of 70 days decreased by 4 days quarter over quarter. This item may fluctuate from quarter to quarter over time. Total unbilled receivable were down by $17 million as compared to the third fiscal quarter of 2015. Our total deferred revenue, both short plus long term, increased by $23 million sequentially in Q4. As indicated in the past, both of these items may fluctuate from quarter to quarter. Our cash balance at the end of the fourth fiscal quarter was approximately $1.4 billion, though net of short-term debt, it was $1.1 billion. We drew down $220 million on our credit facility in Q4 for short-term funding purposes, and the balance has since been fully repaid. Our 12-month backlog, which includes anticipated revenue related to contracts, estimated revenue from managed services contracts, letters of intent, maintenance, and estimated ongoing support activities, was $3.08 billion at the end of the fourth fiscal quarter, up $70 million sequentially. Backlog for Q4 reflects extension of Amdocs core activities and the consolidation of the Converse VSS assets, the acquisition of which was completed in early Q4. During the fourth fiscal quarter, we repurchased $182 million of our ordinary shares under our current $750 million authorization plan. We have $260 million remaining out of this authorization as of September 30. Now, turning to our outlook, we expect revenue to be within a range of $905 million to $945 million for the first fiscal quarter of 2016. Embedded within this guidance, we anticipate a marginal sequential impact from foreign currency fluctuations as compared to Q4. For the full fiscal year 2016, we expect total revenue growth to be within the range of roughly 2 to 6% on constant currency basis and roughly 1 to 5% on a reported basis, after including an anticipated drag from foreign currency fluctuations of about 1%, relative to the exchange rates prevailing at the end of our fourth fiscal quarter 2015. Incorporated within this outlook and consistent with our prior expectations, we anticipate revenue from our directory business in fiscal 2016 to decrease in the double-digit percentage range, placing a drag of less than 1% on the total company results. We anticipate our non-GAAP operating margin for fiscal 2016 to be at the higher end of our long-term target range of 16.2 to 17.2%, which is fairly consistent with our full-year performance in fiscal 2015. As a reminder, operating margins may fluctuate within our long-term target range from quarter to quarter. We expect our non-GAAP effective tax rate to be within a new target range of 13-16% for the full fiscal year 2016. This range is wider on the high end compared with our previous guidance range of 13-15% and reflects growing economic and political pressure in many jurisdictions and for multinational organizations such as the OECD to increase tax revenue. We expect the first fiscal quarter diluted non-GAAP EPS to be in the range of 82-88 cents. Our first fiscal quarter non-GAAP EPS guidance incorporates an expected average diluted share count of roughly 154 million shares and the likelihood of negative impact from foreign exchange fluctuations in non-GAAP net interest and other expense. We excluded the impact of incremental future share buyback activity during the first fiscal quarter as the level of activity will depend on market conditions. For the full fiscal year, we expect to deliver 3.5-7.5% diluted non-GAAP EPS growth. Our full-year EPS outlook does factor in expected repurchase activity over the year. As Ellie indicated earlier, we plan to execute on our share repurchase program at levels substantially above that suggested by our 50-50 framework in fiscal year 2016. Finally, we expect the total return we deliver to shareholders will be enhanced beyond the earnings growth outlook by our dividend program, which, if the new quarterly dividend rate is approved by the shareholders at the annual meeting in February, would yield about 1.3% on the current share price. Therefore, in fiscal 2016, we expect the sum of our diluted non-GAAP EPS growth plus a dividend yield to equate to a total shareholder return in the mid to high single digits. With that, we can turn the call back to the operator to begin our question and answer session.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, at this time, if you have a question, please press the star, then the number one key on your touch-tone phone. If your question has been answered or you wish to remove yourself from queue, you can do so by pressing the pound key. We also ask that you limit your question to one initial and one follow-up. But again, to ask a question, please press star, then one. Our first question is from Ashwin Shirvaikar of Citi. Your line is open.
Thank you. Hi, Ellie. Hi, Tamar.
Hi.
My question is with regards to, you know, telcos and how they're thinking about their own strategic positioning nowadays. We're seeing a lot of telcos, you know, clearly spend on initiatives outside the purview of their core communications market, whether it's in mobile money or Internet of Things or even the media market with regards to distribution and such. And how does your product need to change and what investments do you need to make in order to go after these opportunities? I know you already have in mobile money, for example, but what needs to happen here to actually tap that opportunity?
So, Ashwin, the answer is that I mentioned several times that we usually have to have a crystal ball of a 1.5 to 2 years down the road horizon. And up until now, especially in recent years, we did a good job in predicting where the market is going. And as such, we keep on investing in this type of initiatives, but I believe that we are well positioned today into the needs of the carriers, including the initiatives you just mentioned. You know that we did an acquisition and accelerated R&D in the mobile financial services. We see it mainly as an emerging market, new business for carriers in Southeast Asia, in Brazil, in Ecuador, and other places like this. But obviously, it also expands to countries like America. If you're talking about corridors of money between Mexico and the U.S. or Turkey and Germany and Philippines and everywhere in the world and so on and so forth. So this is another component of mobile money. We also talk about more and more sophisticated type of top-ups, which is a way to transfer money as well. So that's all under this area, and I believe that our position is strong and we are getting momentum there. We invested and we keep on investing in specific use cases of big data analytics because carriers understand today more than ever that the intimacy of their customers could result in a much better usage of this data, And up until recently, they did not really use it, per se. We are, again, front and center of this topic, and we walk all around the world with different. We have already 8 or 9 use cases today, from network use cases to care to campaigning. Now we're going into advertisement and media because it's become an important component of the carrier. So I would say that we will keep on investing in this direction, most likely ahead of the carriers to be ready when they are there. The one area they did not mention, which is, again, it's more like in their core, but it's a significant effort that I think will be relevant for the carriers, is their trend to go to NFV, Network Function Virtualization, which basically means translating or transforming the network from boxes and cables and a lot of technicians in between them to software. We're investing, again, ahead of the market in this domain. Only the early adapters are actually dealing with it right now. Very few carriers around the world, but I believe it will be a major transformation of the carriers as well. So there are many dimensions of new initiatives and new paradigms that the carriers are going into, and we usually either following up closely with them or ahead of time with them. The beauty of it, as I mentioned in my prepared remark, is that we managed to do it so far in the last few years in such a way that we did all this R&D investment and all this service investment without compromising the overall operating margins of the company, protecting you, the investors, in a way from all this fluctuation of investment.
Got it. So it sounds like ongoing investment, nothing that would change in the near term to be a material acceleration or anything like that. And so the second question, unrelated, is it was not clear. Maybe I just missed it. The Comverse assumption that you're making with regard to next year's outlook.
What we try to say basically that we knew that when we are buying Comverse repeatedly in the last many quarters actually repeated a trend of reduction of revenue. So we knew that we are actually getting a business that lost momentum. So what they're trying to say is that we are not magicians. We cannot turn around and stabilize the revenue and then grow it over a quarter or two. So what we are saying is that we see good stabilization process with existing customers, and we provide them additional services and better capability to run the business, maintaining their business. But at the same time, we're building pipeline. So I would expect in the next following quarters to start, announcing maybe new activities around Comverse assets, which will give us the feeling that we are doing the right things in terms of generating new businesses. We're just trying to depict, the timing of it and so on and so forth, but the direction it should be that. So we're assuming current, revenue size for, a couple of quarters and then increase of this business as we generate new pipeline around Comverse.
Understood. Got it. Thank you.
By the way, Ashwin, the strategy that we are taking there is that we are developing enough openings, let's go this way, or enough connectors within the Kinnon assets, in the Comverse assets, in such a way that we can leverage the CES component, such as our world-leading product catalog, customer management, e-commerce, ordering, and you name it, to existing Comverse customers. So it doesn't have to be necessarily a full transformation, throwing away something. It could be gradual as well, which is a very beautiful strategy, and I think that we get a lot of credit for that from the current existing Comverse customers.
I understand. It's a policy of surrounding their product with a lot of, because they were not a full-fledged product, so surrounding that with a lot of the other modules that you have. That makes sense.
Exactly. And we do not exclude option, of course, to transform everything, but it's not the mandatory or the only way to do it. Yes, exactly.
Yep. Great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question is from S.K. Prasad Bora of Goldman Sachs. Your line is open.
Thanks for taking my question. Eddie, if you could probably just elaborate on the revenue guidance for FY16. Seems like a bit conservative. Is that largely driven by your expectations around AT&T and the certainty of the revenue stream over the next few quarters? Or is it largely related to the recent Bell Canada deal which you have signed? What's a big contract renegotiation around it? Because you're signing it ahead of the normal cycle. So just want to get your thoughts on that.
So maybe Tamar will add some color later on the Bell Canada, but let's start from the end. It's the Bell Canada deal is something that we are very proud of because I think it's a win-win. It's an extension, but also expansion into different, buying centers and new projects in Bell, and it's a good demonstration of a good renewal and expansion of our relationship with Bell Canada. It has nothing to do with the way we project revenues in 2016. Look, when we usually project revenue is bottom up. We go account by account, activity by activity, probability of sales, and so on and so forth, and we build it up. And there is a lot of moving parts underneath these things. But we don't want to bother you with all the small things. If you ask me, the two major things that shape the slower beginning and accelerated growth in the second half are AT&T discretionary expenses and the Converse build-up of the pipeline. Two different things happen to be more or less in the same timing. The Converse I mentioned already, it was reduction of revenue for quite some time, and we're stabilizing it now, and we're building the pipeline, so we will see the growth in a couple of quarters or so. On AT&T, it's not a toggle. It's not like the government say now we can do direct TV, so everything go immediately into 100% acceleration of activities. It takes time. The fact that we are now sharing with you that we have been selected to AT&T Mexico, or south of what is it called, the AT&T South of the Border strategy, is a very good example because they announced IUSASEL probably a year ago. So you can understand it. They do the deal, they go through the closing of it, then they need to choose a strategy, how they're going to act there. Then they're going to choose a partner, then they start working, and in the beginning, you win something, but you don't get, deploy all the people immediately, and we recognize revenue and percentage of completion. So until you really are in the midst of the project, even the design phase is not very significant in terms of revenue completion. So this is a good example of something that is happening. It's a very positive thing, but it just takes time to get to fruition. So the almost spasm situation that we saw AT&T for almost a year is going away slowly, and we did not expect it to be overnight. So we shared this some light about it last quarter, and I think that we announced then the Cricket, which is one component of the strategy, the prepaid. Now we're announcing the AT&T Mexico, which is a USSL and Nextel, which is the second component of the strategy. There are two more components of this or the strategy that is still completely up in the air, which is DirecTV and what they call the Domain 2.0, which is their code name for AT&T code name for their network function virtualization. Again, we're working diligently on these two and few others. We believe that we are very relevant. We invested in these areas ahead of time. But it takes time for them to choose their strategy and then their vendor set, and then for us to win it and sign it, and then to go into recognition. So these two elements, for different reasons, both the Converse acceleration of the business as well as the AT&T new project, discretionary project coming to fruition, are the two elements that are really affecting the shape of the growth for 2016.
Thanks, Eli. Probably just to follow up on your comments on Converse, could you specify or could you just probably elaborate on the point around the expectations? Is it now ahead of your expectations, or is it broadly in line what you were expecting with? And beyond Comverse, on the M&A pipeline, does it look still rich? Are you comfortable with the valuations out there and still M&A being a priority going forward?
So for the first question, I think we're about where we thought we will be, maybe slightly better in terms of the response of the customers, the dialogue that we have with them. We're finding a lot of serious customers that need a lot of help, which can be translated eventually to revenue and growth and so on. So the same goes with the people, the engineers we got and so on. So I think that we are at where we thought we will be at this stage, maybe slightly ahead of it, but it's marginal. So let's call it par. In terms of the M&A pipeline, our pipeline is very rich. In terms of technology, consolidation, diversification, getting into new areas. We believe that M&A will be important for us in 2016, definitely. As we demonstrated, when we don't have the right targets, or when we negotiate better price, which is have been the case in twice the last two or three years, then we can afford to accelerate buyback and dividend stuff like this. And it will be, in terms of timing, it will be more active on M&A. It could be that it will slow down a little bit, the buyback. But that was actually, our thesis, the 50-50 thesis from day one. I'm pleased that it's working. I think that we are showing that we are disciplined. In other words, when we can, we accelerate buyback. We don't need to feel the pressure or something. We just do it. And on the other hand, if 2016 and 17 for second discussion will be more acquisitive, then maybe we'll slow down a little bit the buyback. But that was our message all along, and the pipeline is rich. We're a good company, and we're in a good position. So companies come to us, and they want to be part of us.
SK, just to clarify, the guidance we've given for fiscal 16 does not factor in any new M&A that may come along.
Okay, that's great. Thanks for taking my questions.
Thank you, SK.
Thank you. Our next question is from Mark Sue of RBC Capital. Your line is open.
Thank you. If I look at Comverse as a contributing factor, and I look at the new growth areas of mobile financial services, NFV, big data analytics, is there a way to quantify how big these things will be over the longer term, for example, as a percentage of revenue when they might reach 10% in the future? Just trying to see how the ramp might be, considering we're still in the very early days, but you do have very good examples of customers such as Telefonica, that are starting to percolate. So we're just trying to see the trajectory there, please.
So, Mark, it's a very good question. I'll try to give you an answer. I'm not sure it will be full answer. Look, the Comverse deal we knew from day one were about all about, customer enriching the customer list and the customer presence. It was not about technology. It was accelerating partial or full transformation in the market by the fact that we own the legacy, if you will, and the future. And if we will do a good job, we will see, maybe a couple of new customers moving to new technologies every year, every few quarters, and that will be a proof point that we are doing the right things on the Comverse deal. It's all around the classical revenue management enhanced by customer management and so on and so forth. When you're talking about the MFS and BDA and NFV, these are completely new topics. In BDA, we see already tens of millions of dollars coming in generally. So it went from zero maybe a year ago to a few tens of millions of dollars already. So this is the rate that we see. I don't see any reason why it would not keep on going this way. It's very intermingled in a way with the rest of the project because BDA is now like an add-on. It could be an add-on to a customer management application, or it could be an add-on to a network optimization application, so. But if you try to carve out, because we want also to know how much money we spend versus what we get, It's already in the tens of millions of dollars after a year or something, which is nice. Anytime we can grow. And this is a real project. I mean, this is a real value to customers. And I'm glad that we did not go with a splashy M&A on big data analytics and stuff like this, because that could have cost us a lot of money. And we chose to develop it on our own, on standard tools in terms of Hadoop databases and data models and so on and so forth. When it comes to mobile financial services, it's also in the tens of millions of dollars already. Some of it came from M&A, some of it came from new projects. To predict this growth is actually a little bit harder, because the receptiveness and the adoption rate in the emerging market with such ideas is really quite wild. And sometimes governments would push it and maybe it will find. So I think that the entire world is still waiting for a few use cases. It could be that international top-ups will be one of those use cases. It could be that, you know, transfer of money to corridors of natural transfer of money would be an interesting. It could be that microloans would be the thing. That application-wise, we are ready. Can we translate the market and expand the market tomorrow morning? I don't know. This is one of the things that may be out there in a slow rate, relatively slow rate, and then all of a sudden become an overnight success. NFV, again, is a completely different dynamics. NFV is one of these areas that you invest quite heavily in the beginning. Very, very complicated technology. Very few people can do it. We believe we are one of those few that, A, can do it, and B, has no conflicting interest in opposed to the Cisco of the world and the Ericsson of the world and those guys. We are the disruptor there. But it's a very, very different type of application that we are developing. So far, we are doing certain things that are really groundbreaking, in our opinion. It will translate to revenue and growth only later on in the year, maybe 2016, second half, maybe 2017. The point, though, is that if it's successful, that could be also hundreds of millions of dollars in several years from now. These are large projects. These are very important trends. So participating in this mega trend could be quite sizable. And in between, there are a lot of other things of, you know, media and advertisement and IoT and other things that I don't think there's a point to discuss it right now. But I hope that I gave you some kind of color, and each one of them is slightly different, so it took me longer to explain the dynamics on each one of them.
That's helpful, Ali. And then if we're to just look at the snapshot of your customers, the service providers who are going through quite a bit of change, pricing, churn, some are even going through transformative M&A and asset sales. In your discussions in terms of what their core competencies are, do you feel that people, our service provider customers, are now more inclined to use solutions such as Amdocs, or still kind of debating the benefits and the cost benefits of outsourcing their network? It is a segment that's changing rapidly, and I feel that we're at a tipping point in the industry.
So it's a good question again. I don't think that I can tell you there is a trend or there is a typical answer. Because, we work with different carriers all around the world, and they have very different opinions about this question. Some of them are already maturing to this, and some of them are really trying new ideas how to, you know, outsource some of their operation and so on and so forth. I don't think there is one answer to that, and I think it's a bit too early to talk about it as a trend. The one thing I can mention is not on the network aspect, but everybody is now talking about digitizing their customer management. That is to say, there is a huge trend to push the traffic from the high-end, high-cost call centers, CSRs, and so on, to the self-service, including commerce. E-commerce and telecom is very complex, very complex. So all this care and commerce is going through a major transformation under the code name digitizing the customer management. This is a trend that we see all around. We are well positioned for that because we made all this investment, you know, a year ago, a year and a half ago. The latest component, which is our e-commerce, is already 6 months in the market, and we have some good wins. You know, the one that we mentioned actually is Singtel, of this consolidation of their what they call Project Spring, but it's their consolidation of the customer self-service, customer management, digital customer management, including commerce, is something that we are now going to do for them. So this is a trend we see already. The other side of digitization is actually the network digitization, which is the NFV, network function virtualization. And the business model that would come along with it is really hard to call it a trend yet.
Understood.
I hope that I gave you some color that will help you, you know, understand the dynamics.
Yes, the framework is helpful. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mark.
Thank you. Our next question is from Tom Roderick of Stifel. Your line is open.
Hey, guys. Good afternoon. Thanks for taking my question. Ellie, I wanted to ask you a little bit, particularly on the rest of world region for you. ROW was, I think, a new record and 27% growth, so really strong performance there. A lot in the news lately, particularly revolving around emerging markets. So what are you seeing out there in real time? Any evidence that segment is slowing down for you? If I look at some of the new wins, particularly Singtel, it doesn't necessarily imply that, but kind of curious what you're seeing on the ground and how we ought to think about the construct of the ROW segment as you put that into your guidance for 2016.
So Tom, as a matter of fact, we don't see a slowdown on the bottom line. We don't see a slowdown. I don't know that we can really repeat 27% a year. Okay, let's be honest. And we had lumpiness in this number. It was always double digit, but we had different years. I think that what we're enjoying right now is all this foundation and all this wins that we won, you know, more than a year ago, and we go to good execution and we build the operational centers to support it and so what you see right now is actually a result of something that we've done in the last year, sometime theory. As for the future, if I analyze the pipeline and the richness of the pipeline, it's actually everything. We have full transformation, graduate transformation, CM transformation, we have network optimization, we have, you know, digital and e-commerce there. We have OSS projects. I mean, everything we have in the pipeline, it's a strong pipeline. So I think it's sustainable to have double-digit growth also for 2016. Don't expect necessarily 27%. I'm not sure that I expect it, but it's a strong growth. In terms of the dynamics of the market, look, China is slowing down, but we are not in China. India is, you know, nobody knows how to analyze it, but we have relatively little business in India. So it's all potential for us. I mean, China, we will not go there anytime soon, but India is a potential for us. But when you look at the other countries, you know, now we are into Korea and have more business in Indonesia and more in the Philippines and more in Brazil and more in Chile and more in Argentina and more in many other countries that we have never been before. And I think that these countries will continue evolve. We are the most relevant ones. Obviously, there are cheaper ones and provided than us. And our competitors are quite aggressive, and they would try to offer everything more or less for free. But up until now, the quality wins. You know, the value that we're being, the fact that they know that they start with a project with Amdocs, they will finish it, which is not a common thing in the industry. This Korea Telecom, for an example, it's the second time Korea Telecom is trying to do this project. They announced a major failure with our competitors, and they come back to us. By the way, 4 years ago, they came to us and said, guys, we cannot do this project in the way you're setting it up. Good luck. And now they come back after losing a lot of money. So I think that the overall richness of the pipeline, our position in the market, lead me to believe that that we can keep on going in double digit, and it will be a strong segment for us in 2016, probably beyond.
Great, very good. I want to ask one more question here around the Guadalajara, Mexico, the center you're opening up for development and operations down there. Anything you can share with us with respect to the types of positions you're looking to add there, and how aggressively you want to sort of step up the investment in that territory?
So as usual, we are careful. So we start with maybe 150 people or so. It's the type of delivery and ongoing support that we need on the at the right time zone and in the right language. We are people that work closely to our customers, sometimes on site with our customers, sometimes in a regional center. Like the center that we have in Manila, for example, can support and will support in the future many more countries than the Philippines on operation. The one Guadalajara will have the same function. It's not only for Mexico and the project in Mexico. We have center that support today that we established several years ago in Brazil, both in Sao Paulo and in San Carlos. But these are Portuguese-speaking, and it's very different, and they support the Brazilian growing business. And we needed another center, Spanish-speaking, in the time zone there and in the right cost. And after analyzing all the different alternatives, we came across with Guadalajara because of many universities and cost of living and other elements. And we will start at a certain, we started already in a certain level, and we'll grow as the business will grow. If we don't have to grow it, we won't grow it. And we don't pour money first. We just did the initial things, and that's it. And now it will follow with the business and the growth of the business.
Wonderful. Last quick one from me, Ellie. Curious for your additional thoughts on the competitive landscape on the network optimization business. You mentioned, I think, you know, obviously you guys have been the disruptor in that market. I know Cisco has made some moves competitively. Some of the other NEPs have as well. What are they doing? What are the traditional network equipment providers doing to sort of protect their position, whether it's through, you know, pricing or bundling or things of that nature? And how... what are they doing as a response to your disruption in the market?
Look, to be honest, the first thing they do is they try to use a lot of FUD, a lot of fear and uncertainties against us because we are the new guys in this area. They would try to slow this thing as much as they can. They would not announce it necessarily, but we see from everywhere. It's not like specific company. I can tell you all the NEPs, all the of the guys that are producing a lot of boxes are trying actively to slow down this trend. I don't think they can do it. You know, even if they slow it down, it would not take, let's say, 5 years to come to full fruition. Maybe it will take 7 years. You cannot slow this down. And I'll tell you more than that. Carriers cannot afford themselves not to do it because otherwise... the big guys will do it themselves. Level 3 will do it. Amazon will do it. They will build their own networks. And if the carriers are not careful, both, by the way, MSOs, the Comcast and the Charter of the world, and the AT&T and the Verizon of the world, if they would not do it, other people would do it for them or to them. So they have to do it. The providers will try to slow it as much as possible. They say that they are investing in it and all of that. I don't think so. And every time that you see that they are buying a company, we've seen in several cases like this, they kill the company. In other words, they buy companies that have some momentum in this area, and especially to kill them and not to build them. And we have a very different opinion. We have a different opinion that we've been infrastructure and new components and new theory and new approach to this entire thing. And we'll see. We'll let the best man win.
Thank you. Our next question is from Shaul Eyal of Oppenheimer. Your line is open.
Thank you. Hi, good afternoon, Ellie and Tamar, Matt as well. Ellie, you mentioned already 10 use cases with respect to the big data activities. Do you think maybe there's room down the road to partner with some of the leaders also in the big data space?
So first of all, I mentioned 8 or 9, and we count them one by one, so I don't want to round it to 10. We'll get to 10, we'll get to 22, but I'm an engineer, so we have to be accurate. I'm teasing you, but... In terms of the partnership, look, it's an ecosystem. We are partnering in some cases already. So all the generic tools of the data lake, the Hadoop database, all that, we work with IBM, with EMC. We work with already with some open source, which is an interesting angle to this space. In terms of data models, we're working with three different universities. We're not trying to develop our own data models. A lot of it is available out there, but the new ones that we need to do, we're actually working with some, you know, academia and academic research. So it is an area for collaboration. I'm not sure that necessarily it will be with the traditional people that are saying that they invest billions in data, in big data analytics. I actually think that the initial signs, at least, show that our approach is much more practical. We spend not a lot of money, very, very tailored, very targeted to specific things that we understand better than anyone else. Don't forget, it all starts with data and trends of data. We understand the data elements and how to look through them and how to see through huge amount of data, probably better than anyone else. So I do not exclude cooperation at all. We are doing some of it already. But I think that the magic powder would come from us in the next use cases as well.
Got it. Tamar, this quarter backlog actually up nicely from a sequential basis. I think about $70 million. Prior quarters it was about $20-something million on a quarterly basis. Is that driven by some of the recent announcements you guys have made today, those additional press releases?
Yes, definitely. I mean, some of these projects we announced, whether it's the digital project in Singtel, the win in Vodafone UK Enterprise, et cetera, definitely translate themselves into the next 12-month backlog. Some of the announcements we've had are more about increasing visibility into the longer term, like the Bell Canada renewal and Rogers. So I think we have a good mix of drivers of growth into the announcements we've had today, as well as protecting the long term and then creating a recurring base also for years, 2018, 19, 20. We want to see, this business continuing for the long term.
Got it. And if I may, just a final one, Eli. Your own thoughts on the Cisco and Ericsson strategic announcement. Do you view it as being done from a direction and point of strength, or rather the other way around?
Look, I'm not sure I'm the best person to opine on it. I'm not objective. to start with, but I think it's a very complex deal. Okay, it has a lot of. If you ask them how exactly they're going to do it and mix the internet and broadband equipment with the wireless and who exactly is going to, but the point mainly, in my opinion, it's all about the history, not about the future. It's very complex to develop NFV applications. I'm telling you, as someone who is doing it right now, as one company. Now, you can do it with one of your customers. That's fine, too. But two companies that have very different approach to life, if that's about the future, I think it will be even more complex to execute some of it. Whether it comes from a strength or weakness, I think you better ask this company.
Thank you. Our next question is from Will Power of Robert Baird. Your line is open.
Great. Thanks for taking the questions. Let me first maybe start on North America. You've provided some good color on AT&T. I wonder if you could give us any thoughts on Sprint, and in particular because they've made a number of recent public comments about desiring to cut $2 billion in annual costs, and they've singled out a number of areas, but including billing and IT. And so I guess could you maybe frame for us, how you think about the risk and or, opportunity there as they try to turn around things?
So, Will, listen, I think that we've been proving the point that we are part of the solutions of the future of Sprint rather than there being their problem several times in the past, and including change of ownership, and the Japanese coming in and believing that they know everything and the Americans understand nothing. And through change of CEO with new CEO with new energy coming in. I can tell you that our base business with Sprint is very solid, it's very relevant, it's very strong. Discretionary is always a question. So in recent quarters, we had some very important milestones that we delivered to Sprint, which we believe that will help them in the future business, including some sophisticated turbocharging and high-speed turbocharging that they can put to the wall right now, their war against the competitors. All kind of self-service application that they would probably come with it in the future. So, you know, nothing is guaranteed there. But so far we are being called time and time again to strategize and help Sprint, and we are doing it. Now, there is a lot of investment in the network aspect that we are not part of today, and on some OSS that we are not part of today. So I think there is, yes, there are some risks, because every company that goes to, you know, cost cutting may affect us as well. But I think that our position is strong on the current business, and the potential of new business, I think we proved to them that we are very relevant in many other areas. I hope that that will translate to some new businesses as well with Sprint.
Okay. No, thank you. That's helpful. And then maybe just to come back to Europe, you know, you had nice growth, you know, sequentially, you know, year over year this quarter, announced a nice win with Vodafone. I guess really the question is, do you think the trends you saw, you know, exiting, you know, the September quarter, you know, can continue and you can generate that type of growth? And then maybe, you know, if you could just update us on Vodafone overall, I mean, how you think about the opportunities, because it feels like that's been, you know, up and down over the years.
Yeah, well, it's a very good question. I think overall, and I mentioned it in the prepared remarks, we think Europe can actually grow, but it will fluctuate. Not because of the nature of the project, as we are saying, rest of the world is lumpy because of the nature of the business and the nature of the project orientation. But European mood is lumpy. And more than that, when you look at the carriers of the big carriers of Europe, Deutsche Telekom is doing very, very little, okay? Telecom Italia is doing very, very little. Maybe even the assets that they have in Brazil will be sold eventually. You know, even in Spain, you know, Telefonica in Spain is not as active as they are in Latin America. So it's hard to predict their, you know, when they're going to get into higher gear. Vodafone, on the other hand, is a company that is on a mission to change the world, okay? So, and they need help in this transformation. And as a result, we are translating it, because we convinced Vodafone that we are more relevant than any other partner. Obviously, we don't have 100% of the business there, and we will never have. But we are expanding, and you see that the wins that we are talking about are very different. You know, they are fluctuated between countries and between type of business. This new project we just announced on the enterprise side, which is called Vector in Vodafone, is very important. It's actually consolidating a lot of the assets that they bought from Cable and Wireless and their previous assets. And enterprise in general is highly complex topic, highly complex. It's a sweet spot all around the world, because when you have consumers, they can churn easily between one carrier to the other. You know, the big enterprise like the government, they usually give the business to two or three carriers and they split the work between them, so that's a competition. But, you know, the medium size and the high size of the enterprise is a very lucrative business all around the world, and we see this demand is actually growing also in North America. Look at the cable companies that go into enterprise. Look at the smaller carriers that go into enterprise. So this win is very important. We see other wins. Some of them we announced, some of them we did not. I think that that we are more and more relevant to a lot of the activities that Vodafone is doing all around the world. We are working with them in India. We're working with them across Europe. But there are many assets that or operators that we are not in right now with Vodafone. So I hope that, you know, geographical expansion, so to speak, within the logical geography called Vodafone, would also be relevant. But also in Europe, we have other activities in with three other carriers, in the traditional Europe, in what used to be quote unquote the Eastern Europe, Russia and CIS. You know, there are many elements of Europe. Altogether, we think 2016 will be a good but lumpy year in Europe.
Thank you. Our next question is from Sterling Auty of J.P. Morgan. Your line is open.
Yeah, thanks. Hi, guys. You talked about the building of the pipeline of the Converse business and assets, but just wanted to ask because I wasn't quite clear. Have you seen any churn or any customer losses out of the, you know, the target list of customers that you brought over through the deal?
No.
All right, great. And then can you help us in terms of, you talked about Bell Canada, but how would you characterize the pricing, scope, and size of the deals, the other deals that you announced, relative to other transactions that you've experienced over the last year in those regions? So in other words, just looking for more color around some of the pricing and size of deal trends that you saw with these recent round of deals outside of Bell Canada.
Outside of Bell Canada, in 2015, and if I can think, you know, try to think about 2014, we have seen a wide range of size of deals. I mean, we from typical, you know, 20 million, 30 million deals to, you know, large deals, it could be 40, 50, all the way to mega deals, it could be north of $100 million each. So, you know, the diversity of size of deals varies quite dramatically, and we've seen all types. Obviously, Bell Canada, because it's 5 years and it's Bell, you know, it's a big company. It's you know, hundreds of millions of dollars over the five years. But in terms of pricing, look, the competitors are very aggressive. I have to tell you because we have such a wonderful win rate, and when you have a wonderful win rate, someone does not have a wonderful win rate. So, and it's against all of our competitors combined. It's not like against each one of them. It's against all of them combined. Of course, it's not 100%. It's not even close to 100%, but it's very high. So obviously, the way to fight it, if you cannot, you know, fight on quality and breadth of offerings and services and experience and finger licking type of services we provide around the world, they fight on price. Usually we are not, let me put it this way, always we are the most expensive bid out there. But some aggressive scenarios will, you know, push the price down for a while. Over time it will fix itself because we were always, you know, we're always very open with our customers, what we can do and what we cannot do. So we have pressure of price always. I mean, like, I don't think the last year or two have been different. Maybe since specific countries and specific deals, it was more aggressive than others. Altogether, it's something that we are fighting all the time.
Got it. Thank you, guys.
Thank you, Stan.
Thank you. At this time, I'd like to turn the call back to Mr. Smith for any closing comments.
Thank you very much for joining our call this evening and for your continued interest in Amdocs. We look forward to hearing from you in the coming days, and if you do have any additional questions, please call the Investor Relations Group. Have a great evening, and with that, we'll conclude the call. Thanks.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for your participation in today's conference. This concludes your program. You may now disconnect.